staff report.
Well, good morning, Dr. Horn, and members of the board, and members of the public, whom I recognize. My name is Dr. Bruce Warden. I'm an environmental scientist in the non-point source unit in the Water Board South Lake Tahoe office. I'm here to present information concerning water quality certification and waste discharge requirements for the Tahoe Key Property Owners Association, which is item number 12 on your agenda. What we're here to do today, primarily what we being myself and Doug Smith, I should recognize, we work together very closely.
He's going to get up and speak also.
TKPOA will be presenting later. We've been working on this for over a year. Several meetings, hammered out the details, also met with agency representatives, making sure that what we're doing is consistent with theirs, City of South Lake Tahoe, TRPA, who will also be making a presentation today. Primarily, we want to work with the Keys, the weed problem there, and start the process of correcting that issue with this permit. The location of the Keys, it's in the southern end of Lake Tahoe. Closer view of the Tahoe Keys, and note that about a third of the total area of the Keys is water, with close proximity of residential and commercial areas to the water. Lots of water contact. There's actually 372 acres of land and 172 acres of water in the area. Tahoe Keys main lagoon is near the west basin entrance on the slide there, the upper part of the slide, and the marina lagoon is near the east channel below. Notice that there's a lot of boats, particularly in the marina, and also associated with the residential area, so it's a boating community. This is a major beneficial use of the Keys. Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association is a nonprofit common interest residential subdivision development in the city of South Lake Tahoe. It encompasses about 1,200 single-family residential units and over 300 townhouse residential units. Common properties of the TKPOA include beaches, clubhouse, swimming, tennis courts, basketball courts, navigable waterways, boat docks, piers, and parklands. There have been five NPDES permits starting in 1975 through 2004 for the Tahoe Keys. In 1998, there was an alleged discharge of alum resulting in a cleanup and abatement order and a settlement agreement in 1999. The treatment plant that was at issue is no longer operational, and there are no plans to run it in the future. The last NPDES permit in 2004 covered only the water circulation system, not the treatment plant, and also included a new requirement for non-point source control covering fertilizer and irrigation. The purpose of this permit is primarily to protect beneficial uses, recreational beneficial uses, swimming, fishing, boating, etc., cold water habitat, navigation. The prime beneficial uses, there are quite a few more beneficial uses related to Lake Tahoe, but those are the ones most directly affected. Reduction of nutrient loading is also an important issue because that's biostimulatory for plants in the Tahoe Keys. Primarily, pollutants of concern would include aquatic invasive plant species and weeds, can be considered a kind of biological pollution, and nutrients, particularly nitrogen and phosphorus, which are very much biostimulatory. Additionally, of importance in this permit is that the 2004 MPDS permit will be rescinded as part of this order, or the proposed order. There are two aquatic invasive plant species in the Tom Keys Main Lagoon and Marina Lagoon, Eurasian milfoil, which is on the left, and curly-leaf pondweed, pictured on the right. Fragments of Eurasian milfoil can sprout and repropagate new plants. This is an issue when it comes to harvesting. The curly-leaf pondweed forms vegetative buds called turions, which you can see in the upper left of the curly-leaf pondweed illustration. They're basically little miniature plants that in summer are produced and can travel around and start new infestations. This is a native coontail. It's not obviously invasive, but it can become a problem if it overgrows. Pretty much it can become an aquatic weed if there's overgrowth of it, and it's something, definition of a weed, something in the wrong place at the wrong time. In other settings, it may be just fine. It can appear beneficial uses in some instances. The medicinal definitions beyond what I've hit on here is that, in general, if I refer to aquatic plants, that includes both aquatic invasive species and native plants. And then that would be among what we call harvested aquatic weeds, which the harvest is going to collect everything. So that's those aquatic plants removed from Tom Keys lagoons using weed harvesters. And here's a weed harvester. This is actually the one in the Keys, and is taken from a prior TKPOA presentation with their permission. Shows you the kind of operation involved in it. It collects the weeds, and then they're disposed of in a, are actually put in windrows in a corporation yard, dried, and then taken out of the basin for disposal. This permit also includes provisions that require them to make sure that no propagules are released out into the environment during the drying process or transport process. Tom Keys spends over $250,000 harvesting weeds every year in the lagoon and the Marina Lagoon, the Main Lagoon and Marina Lagoon. This is just an example of a curly pondweed infestation on an oar for, I think, something like a boat would be. This is an example of impairment of recreational beneficial uses. Certainly affects swimming and probably aesthetics as well in a lot of cases. And this is a boat propeller tangled with aquatic weeds, so it can also affect navigational uses of water as well. One of the two main components of the permit is the integrated management plan, which deals with aquatic weeds. This is a water-based control. We also have land-based controls, which will be embodied in the non-point source plan, which I'll go over later. The integrated management plan is to be developed to deal with aquatic plants, to eliminate the spread of plant aquatic invasive species from the Keys to Lake Tahoe, enhance water quality, reduce non-native fish habitat, enhance native habitat, reduce non-native habitat, restore and maintain beneficial uses of water, which I mentioned before. Development of the integrated weed management plan include an education and outreach component for homeowners and voters. It's going to include brochures, press releases, promotion of best management practices for aquatic invasive control, and also a boat inspection program. Additionally, to the integrated management plan, I'll mention later, there's a the water quality certification streamlines the issuance of non-chemical control methods such as bottom barriers. Watercraft inspections are now required for all boats entering Lake Tahoe, including the Keys, and it's an important part of aquatic invasive species prevention. You can see on the back of the vest there, AIS boat inspector aquatic invasive species inspector. Bottom barriers may be installed by divers or lowered by weighted weights from docks or boats. This is a clip from a Tahoe Resource Conservation District project in Lake Tahoe. They've done numerous projects around the lake with this approach. And then the non-foreign source plan, this is the second required plan and addresses land-based sources. It's to control direct discharges to the Tahoe Keys Main Lagoon or Marina Lagoon. That would include surface water runoff and percolating groundwater. There are several components of the plan. There's fertilizer irrigation management required of common areas. For private areas, there's an education and outreach program which involves tracking the success of those outreach efforts. It would include surveying people who have been, well, first off, documenting how many people were reached, how many homes were reached, and of those that were reached, how many responded and actually implemented the approach. Getting actions in terms of management, mapping of sensitive areas, drained directly to surface waters. The non-foreign source plan is to be consistent with the newly adopted California drought measures, which promote water conservation and limit irrigation overwatering. That is in the permit. We added it to the proposed. It was not in the tentative.
It's under your
laptop. Water quality certification requires compliance with Army Corps of Engineers permit for modifications to water in the U.S. We're using a small habitat restoration project approach, which allows it to be categorically exempt under CEQA. This puts a limit of 5 acres total on all projects in the Keys of a lifetime. Most of the projects are going to be very small. Homeowners putting on their near their docks some bottom barriers and things like that, on the order of maybe hundreds of square feet at a time. In order to do the water quality certification, there is a need to provide an exemption of prohibition for modifications below the high water rim of Lake Tahoe in the basin plan. It has to show that the project is necessary for environmental protection, but there's no reasonable alternative to avoidance of encroachment below the high water line, and that impacts are fully mitigated. Attachment E to our permit includes best management practices for bottom barriers that must be followed in order to have an approved project under this permit as part of that requirement. And in the monitoring and reporting plan, there's a requirement for aquatic plant monitoring plan associated with the integrated monitoring plan. And also, water quality monitoring is required if they operate the circulation system. Survey work is to be timed under the aquatic plant monitoring plan to capture non-native plants such as curly-leaf pondweed and Eurasian milfoil at maturity and at the end of peak of their growing season, which typically occurs mid to late August. A hazard analysis and critical control plan to prevent spread of plant propagules, and survey data for large infestations of non-natives is to include some very specific parameters, transects with data points that were taken every 20 feet along 100-foot sections, and for smaller infestations, square footage shall be recorded. This is, if the circulation system operates, these parameters are to be measured. It's tied to the circulation system to monitor changes during operation, mostly nutrients and some other related parameters. These are the locations of the monitoring points should the circulation system be operated and monitoring is required. W is the intake for the circulation system, and number 3, 13, and E are outfalls of the circulation system. or near outfalls, I should say. For all of our, for actually both of our plans, our integrated management plan and the non-point source plan, we use an adaptive management approach. There's annual reporting required that document the actions they took during the current season, and then in the update, they assess what worked, what didn't work. They make recommendations for what they're going to do next year. We always do this in the off season, so they have time to think and prepare for the next season. And they'll adjust that plan for the next season. Also, they can integrate new technologies that come along or new approaches that might be more successful. As you know, these things are always evolving. You don't want to lock them into any particular method. If they find something better, more effective, that comes along. That's the way this works. We've done this process with golf courses in the Lake Tahoe Basin, and it's been very successful. We've had really good results with this approach. We received 5 comment letters, 3 with a lot of kudos for taking this endeavor on, and there were no adverse comments. There were several editorial suggestions and one pointing out additional storm drains that we were unaware of that we're investigating whether they are common with the city of South Lake Tahoe or not. There are provisions in our permit for Cove 3C, which is specifically mentioned, that is a common facility. It has pipes going in from both TKPOA drop inlets and City of South Lake Tahoe drop inlets, commingling and going out a common drain pipe into the Tahoe Key Marina. We think it's a similar situation in the Islander 3 area, which is some condos along Venice Avenue, but we've contacted the City of South Lake Tahoe and we're attempting to find out if indeed that is the case. Records for these storm drain systems are pretty old, sometimes hard to get all the information on them. They have to really dig way back, so we're kind of waiting here. That I suspect it's probably a common system, but we will find out and deal with it appropriately. Additional language was added to the permit to deal with the situation in the proposed. In terms of our responses to comments, there were minor corrections and clarifications, language clarification. One of the big changes I mentioned is that we added in the proposed WUDR requirement for numeric effluent limits, should TKPOA not provide evidence that they are cooperating with City of South Lake Tahoe and aiding City of South Lake Tahoe to meet their requirements for load reduction. City of South Lake Tahoe operates the stormwater system in the Keys, and we've had meetings with them. They are handling that in the things under the municipal stormwater permit. In situations where there's overlap, there's language, relatively new language associated with the Tahoe TMDL that allows for these shared facilities to just work together rather than requiring them to do effluent limitations. It's an option. It's an either or. In this permit, so long as they work together and show and provide evidence and report that, they will not have to comply with effluent limits. Then, in summary, this WDR allows for plant control with bottom barriers and allows water circulation and harvesting of aquatic plants under the conditions of the integrated management plan, which will be developed. Requires the implementation of source control measures for aquatic weeds and biostimulatory substances. Grants an exemption to the prohibition to modify Lake Tahoe below the high water rim, and rescinds the prior 2004 MPDS permit. There is a late addition, which is enclosure 4, and you should have it in your packets. It's also in the back of the room. And also one late revision, which deals with language for bottom barriers. where we shore up language requiring that the bottom barriers be removed in the fall every year. We've already discussed this with members of PKPOA, and they're on board with this, but we want to make sure that the language is in the permit. So we recommend, staff recommends adoption of this order as proposed with the late revision. Any questions, comments?
Any questions, Mr. Jardine? Mr. Bumper? Mr. Sandow?
What determines whether or not the circulation system is operating?
Well, first off, it has to be physically possible.
The water
level has to be high enough. I think it's
6225.
Right now, it's below that by probably a couple of feet. Then they have to want to circulate. Commonly, the reason is requests from homeowners, particularly those areas that are in the fingers of the keys that may get no water movement at all. They might want to flesh that out. They don't necessarily have to do so, and it may not happen at all. Certainly won't happen this year. Other questions?
One other question. If adaptive management, pursuing adaptive management, shows that there is something new to be done, does that require getting back to us or simply letting us know?
I think in the big picture things, the way that it is operated and passes, they will report back to us and report to the executive officer. She will review it with usually some staff help and will determine, is this okay or not? We have not ever had any problems with this. It's usually we found that this approach is a little bit better. We're going to use a different equipment. We're going to use a different approach. If they propose something really radical that's out of the scope of the permit, I think maybe we would have to revisit this. But in my experience, that hasn't happened. Usually it's just changes that improve the efficiency of the management. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. I'd like to follow on the Board Member Sandell's question about the circulation system. From a water quality standpoint, what are the pros and cons of operating that system?
No, I'm not sure that I know the answer to that. I can tell you what would happen in general is that whatever is in those areas where there's not much flow, it'll come out into the main part of the lagoons and kind of average, so to speak, whatever the water quality is in that area. Some of the things that would happen is there's actually an exchange of water between Lake Tahoe and the Keys that happens regardless of lake level related to thermal properties. There's actually a thermocline that is set up in there, and the cold water will move one way and the warm water another way all season long. That probably would be disrupted because circulating the water would break up that thermocline. So there would actually probably be less exchange with Lake Tahoe as a result. It's kind of counterintuitive, but that's my take on it. But I have no data or no study to back that up, only just the fact that it's based on a gradient, and it would seem logical that once you break that up, that won't be happening anymore. It may overall improve some water quality. There are some areas in the Keys based on data collected, self-monitored data under past MDS permits where nitrite shows up. And nitrite only shows up when you have chemically reducing conditions. And when there's chemically reducing conditions, typically you get a lot of internal loading of nutrients, a lot of turnover of nutrients in the sediments, which there are some pretty rich sediments in the Tahoe Keys. So I would expect actually circulation might reduce loading overall if you break up that anaerobic zone in the interaction with sediment.
your comment about the thermocline is interesting because I was thinking that circulation might help bring the temperature of the water in the Tahoe Keys down, but what you're saying is that...
We're trying to average it, I would think.
Well, if it's reducing exchange with Lake Tahoe, then it actually, then circulating the water might actually increase the water temperature in the Keys.
Well,
I mean, average it out and overall increase it as opposed to...
I think what happens is the warm water flows up Lake Tahoe and the cold water flows in underneath into the Keys.
Right.
So actually you're... If you have that thermocline, it's actually net kind of cooling Keys.
Right, so without the circulation system on, it's helping to bring the temperatures down.
Yeah.
Which is counterintuitive.
It is counterintuitive.
I thought.
So, but again, I have no data to back this up.
Right.
It's just speculating based on
that's
systems work.
Because bringing water temperature down in the Tahoe Keys might help with some of the other issues of water quality in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I had a question about, if I understand correctly, you said there's a 5-acre limit on the lifetime limit on coverage of barriers. Why?
That's a requirement of the Small Habitat Restoration Project, which we chose to use. It's appropriate for this kind of project. And it means that we don't have to do a CEQA document, pretty much. It makes it categorically exempt.
Okay.
Did you mean five acres at any one time, or 5 acres total during the term of this permit? Because this permit doesn't have a...
It doesn't have an end. My understanding is that it's 5 acres total.
Is that 5 new acres if you keep reapplying the same...
Well, this is square feet.
5 acres per project or something.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, we're lifted and put back in. Yeah.
It's 5 acres per year. Is that your understanding?
Well, that's something that maybe you could help clarify. That was one of the questions in a comment as well. If it's 5 acres a year, you could end up with hundreds of acres over the lifetime. What's the real intent of it? The Small Habitat Restoration Project.
The barriers have to come back up.
That's true.
And so, at any given time. It could be a maximum of 5 acres, but the barriers won't be put down 5 acres at a time, and they grow all over the area because they're going to be taken back up.
Because if we're saying 5 acres over the term of the permit, that's we would have to redo the permit then, which I don't think was our intent.
This is Doug Smith, supervising geologist. I believe that Mr. Pumphrey is correct, that it's 5 acres total of the barriers basically every season, okay?
But they can move around, the 5 acres.
Yes, but the point is, and what some of the studies show is that the barriers, to be effective, need to be reapplied several seasons in a row, maybe 3 seasons in a row or 4. But there's also diver-assisted pulling, other methods. The diver-assisted pulling isn't subject to that water quality certification, okay? You can go in there and pull those up anytime.
Yeah.
It's just the barriers that is subject to that 5 acres. And so total is 5 acres, and they can move them around as needed.
Yeah, on 12-32, I think it just says the project consists of not more than 5 acres total of non-chemical aquatic weed control. Project size shall not exceed a total of 5 acres. It was my understanding that was 5 acres at a time.
Okay.
Right.
I wonder if we should clarify that in the document because it's...
I think it's clear in the document.
Or
I think it's unclear when you say lifetime, which is not in here.
Okay.
So I think if we leave it as it is, I think that it's sufficient.
Okay.
So do you know comparative cost of barriers versus harvesting? You said they're spending $250,000 a year harvesting right now. Any idea, is using bottom barriers a more expensive or a less expensive way to control the weeds?
That might be a question.
I was going to speak to that.
Okay, good. I'll hold that question. Or you can speak to it?
I can answer it roughly. So, as Dr. Warden said, the harvesting that TKPOA does is about $250,000. $500,000. It's expensive. Doing the bottom barriers, you're talking several million dollars over a long period of time, okay? These barriers are expensive, but the problem is, remember, it's not, one method isn't the answer. Got to do all these things together to really be effective.
Well, yes,
and
but
I'm sure that when the TKPOA folks come up, they can give you some more detail on that.
Okay. I mean, my concern is that bottom barrier, so the mechanical harvesting and weed pulling create propagules, which the bottom barriers do not. So, I mean, to the extent that we can move to systems or methods that don't generate more of the problem, that would be better. And so, I don't know. I'll hold my thoughts until we hear from everybody else. Any other questions for Dr. Wooden? Thank you. John Larson? And Kim, Mr. Larson wanted to submit this for the record. What's your advice on that?
I think it's fine. It summarizes kind of what his comments are. I don't think that it's
new information.
I don't think it's actually directly applicable to the permit. I think it's sort of an ancillary issue.
Okay, so do all the board members have copies?
Not yet. I was waiting for the official. I'll pass it out now.
Madam Chairperson, members of the board, I'm John Larson. I'm president of the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association Board of Directors. I'd like to start with first saying that we greatly appreciate working with your staff in the preparation of these WDRs. Doug Smith and Bruce Warden have been fabulous. They are open, they have been responsive to our questions, and have worked with us to produce what we believe to be a workable document. I've worked a career of over 35 years in water quality. I've worked with every regional board in the state of California, and these two guys are the best that I've seen. So thank you very much. We enjoyed working with them. On comments, first, just to go directly to the bottom barriers, we'd like to see that be a 5-acre maximum at any given time or during any given season. The lifetime would prohibit us from taking advantage of that. So I'd like to start with, we've been working, we're not new to the aquatic invasive species issues. We've been working on addressing them more effectively over the last 5 years. We've been working with the aquatic invasive species groups at various levels within the Tahoe Basin. We've undertaken a 3-year research project to understand what we have, how it works, and what could be used to control it. The results of that have been reported in the final report. The WDR right now lists that as a tentative report. There's a final report. I gave a copy to Doug, and we would like to have the findings from that final report incorporated in here rather than referred to as tentative findings. They're helpful. We spent a lot of money to get there, and so we'd like it to be part of the deal. Current weed control methods are expensive and don't eradicate the weeds. We harvest the weeds merely to keep the waterways open. Our cost in 2013 was $450,000. During that period of time, we removed 16,000 cubic yards of weeds. If you want to visualize that, it's a football field 3 feet deep of weeds. The work to date has shown that the non-herbicide-based methods are very expensive. Bottom barriers to cover the entire Keys Lagoons, all 175 acres, would run somewhere between $12 and $17 million. Or to put that into the context, about 1,200 of our members share in the cost of the weed management program. That would cost $10,000 to $15,000 per property. Every year, or every 2 years for a cycle until there were no longer any weeds. We have found through our studies that if you treat an area, remove the barrier, 2 years later, you can't tell that the barrier was ever there. And so as long as there is a place to provide the recolonization, then just moving barriers around is an exercise in futility. An important point for you to consider in deliberations is that this WDR only addresses property that is owned, operated by Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. There are five other owners in the West Lagoon, the Marina Lagoon, and Lake Tulak that are all infested with milfoil and curly leaf pond weed. And if those are not addressed, they're going to be problematic. The five other owners are the California Tahoe Conservancy, Tahoe Keys Marina, Tahoe Keys Beach and Harbor Association, who have indicated a willingness to work with us and become part of the process to deal with this. The only ones to volunteer. Lagoon Associates own a small shopping center, a commercial center, but they do own the property. And then Tahoe Keys Village is a small commercial area. Lagoon Associates are three attorneys in town that somehow ended up with the property rights to the bottom of Lake Tulak, which is a small lagoon inboard. It is infested, and when there are high runoffs, high flows, it discharges into our lagoon. So if it wasn't addressed, it would just reintroduce the problems. Final thought is that the cost to prepare just the integrated weed management plan is $200,000. It will produce work that will definitely benefit us in addressing the weeds within our properties. It will also provide information that will be useful to the other five property owners, but there is no current provision for sharing the cost of this, and until they're brought into the fray here, they have no interest in working with us on this. To conclude, for us, a successful integrated weed management program must be very cost effective. We can't afford to chase successive cycles of planning, permitting, and minimally effective treatment options. Reinfection from adjacent properties must be addressed. Thank you for your attention. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Mr.
Sindel? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madonna Dunbar from the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association.
Good morning, members of the Water Board, staff, and the public. My name is Madonna Dunbar. I'm the Executive Director of the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association. I've spoken here before. I want to share that the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association Board is very supportive of the work that's been done to come forward for the waste discharge requirements. We provided some comments to the document. We're very supportive of the efforts to really try to address the needs for stormwater management, the need for the integrated management plan, and the 9-point source pollution plan. I think those are really great efforts to try to formalize operations in the Keys of the circulation pump. There are a couple things we'd like to offer as comments that we offered, written comments, and they were not necessarily incorporated in the document. We'd really like to encourage the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association and the other members that are not required, the other property owners that are not required to work with the waste discharge order, to pursue that CEQA process 5-acre limit on bottom barriers, with the size of water body that the Tahoe Keys is, calculates out to more than 30 years of placing bottom barriers 5 acres at a time. And that's if you're doing it in a discrete location. So we'd really like to encourage them not to be afraid of that CEQA process and to really consider going for that so that the potential to do larger installations of barriers could be pursued. We do have concerns over the fact that nutrient monitoring is not required if the circulation pump is not on. From the results that are in the order now, that keeping an eye on the baseline nutrient monitoring, we feel is a very important point to try to understand that feeding of the plants. So we would encourage them to consider that nutrient monitoring is important. And I actually have $5,000 from the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association funds to help pay for nutrient monitoring so we can keep that going for the lab tests. The third point I'd like to offer is, as you know, the Tahoe Water Supplier Association is extremely concerned about the potential use of an herbicide as a solution in the long run, and all the rules do say that all the other methods need to be explored before that even becomes part of a proposed project. We're talking about barriers, we're talking about harvesting. We're working as part of the working group now with the Tahoe Keys. They're a weeds working group, and we're attending the Nearshore Aquatic Weeds Working Group meetings. I do have some resources. I actually have a geotechnical engineer who's willing to try to do some pro bono work to explore the idea of dewatering and dredging and how much that would cost and how effective that could be. So I want to share with the board that even though we don't philosophically want to see herbicides happening, we have, instead of just being on the other side of the fence, we're really trying to work together. And I would encourage the TKPOA to really explore some of those other options that are out there. And yes, it's going to be expensive, but the long-term solution is needed for everybody's benefit. So, and I really wish to applaud the efforts of staff and the board for getting to us to this point. So I don't know if there are any questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Tom Spencer?
My name is Tom Spencer. I'm speaking for myself. I am a member of the Water Quality Committee for the Tahoe Keys, but our official position has already been given by John Larson, so I'm speaking really as a homeowner within the Tahoe Keys. I'd like to point out a few things that I think just need to be points be hammered home, so to speak. One, that report that was referred to that was brought in late should have been considered in these original preparation of the WDR needs, those findings need to be incorporated into this process. It's important that he has the documentation of the costs of doing some of these other techniques like bottom barriers of different types, and that must be in there. Secondly, about costs in general, would you consider that we're talking about somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 per acre to do bottom barriers? You can quickly see how trying to treat 172 acres of open water and waterways that are configured completely differently than you would find out in the lake, it's nothing like treating it in Emerald Bay, where you have a large open area, very few obstructions. We have thousands of posts that hold docks. We have riprap banks. In other words, millions of tiny nooks and cavities where weeds can hide and repopulate from. Reinfestation is the key here. You cannot treat 172 acres simultaneously 3 years in a row to kill all the seed in the bottom. There's no money for that. I mean, come on, we're talking even $5 million is astronomical. We can't do that. To be effective, we'd have to eliminate all possibility of reinfestation, or we're just hooked into this for life. Reinfestation coming right back in where you use bottom barriers, where you pulled it. Can you imagine divers pulling, hand pulling 11 miles of canals? Think about it. Now, apply some common sense here in this, these decisions. So I'm really concerned about the reinfestation issue. I don't see us ever being able to get on top of that. A million nooks and crannies that can harbor weeds from where it can be reinfested. Incredibly complex undertaking. And we don't even have any authority over 30 or 40 of those acres. You're talking just to the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. And I'd like to point something else out. All this stuff got there somehow. Some ponderously stupid fool came in and dumped their aquarium, or maybe several ponderously stupid fools came in and dumped their aquariums to Free Goldie. Live, be free. Okay? There's nothing in any of our activities that stops that from continuing to happen. We can have somebody drive down from Myers next week and Free Goldie again right in Lake Tillac. In fact, maybe it happened. Who knows? Reintroduction. We're on the hook for this for life. Multi-millions of dollars. Think about it. There's ultimately going to have to be a better way. And we want to be cooperative with the WDR, and we want to work. We want to get rid of the weeds. We don't want to be the spreader of the weeds. But this has to be cost-effective. And by effective, I mean it's got to be a solution. You can't just have us spend money. I know there's some people in the room that would just have us throw money at things because it ain't their money. Easy to say. That's not the answer. So that's the extent of my comments, and I appreciate your time.
Any questions for Mr. Thank you very much. Patrick Stone?
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the board. Thanks for your time. I'll be brief. My name is Patrick Stone. I'm a senior biologist with the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. I'm also here on behalf of the Aquatic Invasive Species Program. For the last 4 years or so, I've been a part of and managing the Aquatic Invasive Species Control Program, including the projects that we've been talking about in Emerald Bay and Lake Tahoe, as well as the efforts that we've been working on in the Tahoe Keys. TRPA supports adoption of the new requirements included in this waste discharge order, specifically measures to address aquatic invasive plants and the transport, potential just the existing ecologic impacts and potential transport from the infestation in the Tahoe Keys, as well as addressing nutrient sources and really folding that into the picture and the stormwater sources as well as direct fertilizer use. We really encourage that in future requirements and endeavors, not just by your organization, but throughout the Tahoe Basin. Also, we really, I appreciate what Dr. Warden has included for adaptive management and the ability to annually, I think is fantastic, but even biannually works great when you're talking about a plant that's dynamic and moving. Also, Mr. Spencer mentioned new infestations, and when you're talking about aquatic invasive species and plants, you never know what you're going to find each year when you go out looking. So that ability to identify this as a big picture issue and not just one or two species and have that annual ability to adapt is something that we really appreciate in the order. Just to give you a little background, the AIS program is made up of over 40 private and public organizations and businesses. The Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association has been the leader among the Tahoe Keys Lagoons owners in participating in that program. Of course, the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board staff participates as well. but at the time, currently, along with many restoration projects in the area, The Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program specifically is facing an annual funding deficit. We're aggressively now looking for opportunities for funding to keep the pressure on the species. Hopefully you've heard about the successes that we've had in Emerald Bay. And the success is not only in Emerald Bay. We've really had ability to take high-density populations and reduce their impacts, their ecologic impacts, and turn them into low-density populations. But as also was mentioned earlier, it takes 2 or 3 years to really stay on these populations. So unfortunately, right now, the plants are growing and keeping me up at night. Last couple of nights, or last couple of years, we made really good progress. So we're aggressively seeking funding and help, really in any way that we can to address those current impacts that we've made progress on. I mentioned TKPOA has been the leader among the lagoon property owners. Personally, my work with them started in 2010, where they were really looking for help on what is available. What can we do besides harvesting? You know, we're just keeping up with the problem, and it costs a lot of money. So we put together a grant proposal, and we're successful at funding a project to conduct research to answer exactly those questions. It was a Aquatic Plant Management Research Project was the name of it. So we have a lot of good information from that project, and we wrapped that up. That's the final report, I think, is the report that was submitted a little bit late. But the information in that, I think, fits right in with the idea here with the WDR, in that that information needs to be folded into the integrated management plan. And I've heard a lot of suggestions, great suggestions today for alternative methods and things that need to be explored, potentially even CEQA analysis for going over the 5 acres, which, just frame a reference, our largest barriers that are currently in our inventory, we have about 300 of them. 5 acres would require 550 barriers, give or take, and about 37 days of diver labor at least. That's really ripping through 15 barriers a day, which is the best we ever did in the Keys. So it would sort of be like painting a bridge, unless you had several crews doing this work. So at least in getting started and incorporating with, as was mentioned, diver-assisted removal, where the diver's down on the bottom, picking up every single stem, I think 5 acres will help the Keys get going and really help out some of the property owners so that they don't have to go through a lengthy permit process, just so that they can keep their own space or pier free of aquatic weeds that season. That's where I see the benefit of the barriers. And I think that the 5 acres, at least in the interim, before we have that integrated management plan laid out, is excellent. And certainly it provides additional freedoms that currently are not available to the property owners. I also really like in the integrated management plan identifying that education and outreach piece, because in order to make a change in the Tahoe Keys, it's going to take a culture shift. It's going to take facilitating the movement that the Water Quality Committee has already started towards better stewardship of people's backyards, because a lot of people don't realize in the Tahoe Keys that many of the property owners actually own the lagoon bottom. Their property extends out, sometimes out to the middle of the lagoon. Sometimes there's a little stretch of common area that TKBOA directly manages. But I think it's been most effective for those property owners to understand that and to want to do something about their property. And I think this WGR sort of offers an overarching blanket of what can be done currently, and then what should be done on an annual basis to try to stay ahead of the problem and not just catch up with it on an annual basis. Also, monitoring and reporting, that's an opportunity, I think, to support TKPOA. And where there's an annual need for information, I think there's a common interest among public entities and the private entities involved. And something to potentially adapt annual, perhaps, be overkill. But that's, I think, initially the first 2 or 3 years annual would be great. And then maybe you determine, 2 or 3 year monitoring in case this is more appropriate. But that's all I had. Thank you again for your time.
Okay. So first I'm going to ask board members if you have any questions for Mr. Stone, and then I'll ask you if you have any questions for staff to respond to issues that have been raised by the speakers. And then I'll close the hearing and we'll have board discussion after that. So first of all, does anybody have any questions for Mr. Stone? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions for staff? Mr. Jardine.
I had a quick question regarding this final report that just got published. Can we attach that?
So, the final
report. Identify yourself.
Doug Smith.
Thank you.
Supervising geologist in the Tahoe office. Mr. Jardine, the report that you're referring to, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Larson, actually, if you could give me that. Thank you. This is the first time I've seen this report. Mr. Larson provided it to me today. It's dated March 6, 2014. I believe the report's good. We would need to review this, but what my recommendation is that the conclusions of this report don't significantly change the orders in the WDR. It is very good information, and I think we need to keep it as part of the record, okay? And we will use this in our evaluation in the adaptive management, and it will be part of the record. I don't think that it's necessary to add a finding or change that finding at this time.
Can I make a different recommendation, perhaps? Because none of us have seen the report, and
yes.
So to include it as part of the record for this proceeding, I don't believe would be appropriate. But I do believe that it can be part of the management plan that they're going to be providing. I mean, that could be the basis right there. And so then it would become part of the record as part of that management plan that's produced. But at this point, not having seen that, I think it's difficult for us to include it at this point.
Okay.
Would that make sense to you guys to include as part of that management plan that you will be including? I mean, we don't want to not pay attention to it. We think it's important, but as part of the management plan.
The only difficulty is.
I'm sorry, sir. Can you approach the lectern so we can get you on the?
They can't.
Yeah. Doug, the microphone's off. It's just that
it's
little.
Off.
Yeah.
It's just the recording. It's the audio.
It's that guy right there.
That one. Thank you.
Hello.
John Larson, TKPOA. The difficulty is that the tentative WDR has a finding, and the finding is based on a preliminary of this report. And all we're asking for is that be revised to read the final report and that the finding in the tentative WDR reflect what this report says. And
what finding is that?
Is the finding different between the tentative report and the final report?
Yes, it's not as complete as the final report.
But in terms of just referencing, I mean, I wonder if we can put something in parentheses.
I mean, if the finding doesn't change anything in the order, I don't see any problem with referencing the preliminary report. And I can see Mr. Spencer wants to add his two cents to this.
We think this important. The final report is very important because it has some very strong findings that will be a basis. I do agree that we can include and should include this in an integrative weed management plan.
Can we give Mr. Spencer a chance to respond?
Sure.
But you need to come to the lectern.
Yes, Tom Spencer again. What's in that report could provide some foundation for perspective of how the WDR was constructed. And some of the language in that WDR that makes a presumption that, hand pulling might be an effective way to do it, rototilling, whatever. It really gives you a much better idea of the costs involved with bottom barrier placement and reinfestation. Without it, we feel, we paid $250,000 into a fund to get that done, and it was delivered late. I don't want to go into that, why it was delivered late. We just got it 3 days ago.
I also think that, I mean, what's coming up, I think, is going to be very important outside of this proceeding. You're talking about aquatic pesticide use, and that's going to be a whole different.
I'm talking about use of bottom barriers.
Bottom barriers.
Yes. Read the report.
I mean, is it important enough for us to continue this item until the next time we meet in South Lake Tahoe, which would be in October? October.
I don't want to see a disconnect between that report and the WDR. Personally, I mean, that's just me.
So can you some? I don't know what the conclusion is of the report. That maybe.
No, it would be a disconnect.
What would be the conclusion that we are missing here?
Well, one, we want it to be referenced as a completed report and the date of it in there. And then it can be referenced back to. Okay? This one just says that it's a. Trying to think of the actual wording that's used.
Yeah, and if you could point us to a specific. Finding
we
don't
all have copies of this document?
No, we don't know. I think what they're interested in, Tom, is where the findings are ordered. So in other words, like this talks about the study, the Tahoe Resource Conservation District study, Tahoe Keys and Fire.
Okay, 12-6, it looks like 12-16.
12-16, page 12-16. This talks about that. Is that what this report is?
Right.
Yes, that's the next one.
Okay, so it's page base staff 12-16 or page 10 of the proposed order under non-chemical control of aquatic invasive plant species. It talks about a three-year study, which is referenced here, and it doesn't say draft, it just says...
It says the final results are pending at the end of that paragraph.
Final results are pending. I mean, we could say something like final results were completed March 2014, period.
At least to link it.
You would know it existed, and you know the date that we're actually looking at as the final.
I just don't want to lose this drifting off somewhere.
Okay.
After, you know, almost $500,000 was spent on the research and the surveys.
Sure. So that would be that would satisfy Christians as saying final results for the study were completed in March 2014. March 6th, if we want to be, that's the date on this document that he's holding.
Mm-hmm.
Were completed March 6th, 2014.
Right. So does that language satisfy you?
That would satisfy me.
Okay. Any other questions about the report? Mr. Pumphrey, do you have any questions?
No,
staff?
I do not.
And Mr. Sandell?
My large question for staff is do we need to...
Wait, I'm not sure staff is listening to you.
What do we need to do to incorporate the other five owners of lagoon properties into this, not this order plainly, but for the future?
So, Doug Smith, supervising geologist in the Tahoe office. We had talked about having this WDR applicable to all of the property owners, the Tahoe Keys Marina, the beach and ski club, all those folks. Unfortunately, the Tahoe Keys Marina and the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association are not fully in sync, okay? And having all named all five parties became problematic during the development of this permit. And when the Beach and Ski Club or the Harbor
Tahoe Keys Beach and Harbor.
Thank you. I always forget the names. When they came directly to TKPOA and said we will work directly with you on this, we felt satisfied that would happen. And the remaining four owners, for all intents and purposes, other than the marina itself, are relatively small partners, small landowners, and don't really have much effect in the areas. The Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association is by and far the largest of all of them. The Tahoe Keys Marina is under a separate permit, under the Marina General Permit for the activities of the marina itself. So we didn't want to overlap the Tahoe Keys Marina doesn't have the extensive fertilizer and management practices and irrigation practices that the TKPOA does. And the TKPOA, under their CCNRs, were the appropriate entity to work directly with all the several thousand individual property owners. So we felt it was advantageous to just focus this permit solely on TKPOA, and then we would look at how best to address the other folks down the road.
How far down the road?
Well, the one of them, the California Tahoe Conservancy, is not an entity that does a lot of activities in the Keys. They don't have irrigation practices. They basically manage open space. And so they're not actively active dischargers or potential dischargers of non-point source pollution.
But still they could be a vector for repopulation, reinfestation.
I think they're asking.
Sure.
This is Lori Kemper, for the record. I mean, it sounded like from what the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association is looking for is just an opportunity to really coordinate these bottom barrier projects or weed pulling or weed harvesting. That it's mostly focused, their request has more to do with the weeds in the water, not the non-point source discharges, you know, associated with those other landowners. So I think as the integrated management plan that the homeowners are producing and the research that the Tahoe Resource Conservation District and all the weed group that Patrick Stone's part of and we're part of, as we move forward on implementing these projects to manage weeds, you know, aquatic weeds in the Keys, we need to include all the affected land bottom, you know, lake bottom owners. So I think the way we would start with that would be by meeting with them and encouraging them to be part of that effort, you know, and just knowing schedule-wise where, you know, how things are going to roll out or be implemented and try to get them to participate. And potentially even partnering with volunteers. I mean, the League of Civic Tahoe has a number of volunteers they're working on with to help with bottom barrier projects and weed pulling and things like that. So just trying to collaborate with everybody that, you know, is interested, which I think the landowners are, or these property owners are interested. So, you know, it doesn't have to be an order that we impose. We can just help facilitate permitting if we need to permit those projects or let them know there's certain things they can do without permits. But if we had to issue, if the Conservancy, for instance, decided to do a bottom barrier project on their land, we would issue a separate 401 certification for that bottom barrier project. So it would just be a much more focused permit rather than this permit that's dealing with the sources on the land as well as on the land.
If I could be assistance to understand, I can make a commitment that all their staff together and the other parties that into KPO kind of sit down this summer, I'll say this summer, to see what can be done moving forward on this issue.
That would be a great start.
Any other questions, Mr. Sandel?
No, thank you.
Mr. Dias?
No questions, thank you.
I would like staff to respond to Ms. Dunbar's request that we include nutrient monitoring when circulation property is not on.
That was the question I forgot.
So could you respond to that suggestion, please?
Yes. We had talked about this internally for quite some time, and we discussed this with the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. Under the previous NPDES permits, the Tahoe Keys Property Association for at least 6 years has collected a robust set of ambient water quality monitoring. And over those years, we believe with that data set, they've established the background ambient conditions. So then we asked ourselves, what is the utility of continued ambient monitoring in the absence of the circulation system? And we said, well, because non-point source activities, that's various activities from your lawn mowing, fertilization, and all that, are very difficult to tie to a water quality sample, okay? that that we felt the focus of the permit needs to be on TKPOA's actual management actions in trying to reduce all the potential inputs of nutrient sediment into the waters, rather than continuing to collect some more nutrient data down the road. And we felt that that we could, under our direct authority, the board has this authority to issue a request for investigative order if we determined it was necessary to see if there is a spike of nutrients. And we figured that the reef problem is so thick in the Tahoe Keys that their management activities, their bottom barriers, harvesting, pulling, all of that is hopefully, and the land-based source pollution control plans will hopefully reduce the trickle, if there is a trickle, of nutrients and sediment into the waterways to reduce that weed infestation. And that would tell us more than some more monitoring of nutrients in the waterways.
So I'm assuming that what you received from this, the 5 years of nutrient monitoring that has been done, is that the dynamics of nutrients are predictable. You're not seeing unexplained spikes or wide variability in the numbers or anything like that.
I will defer to Dr. Warden, who's looked at this data very closely.
Bruce Warden, there is quite a bit of data going back and was summarized by TKPOA representatives at our request during this process. There is some seasonal variability, which can be, in general, predictable.
Mm-hmm.
There's variability depending on whether it's a high water year or a low water year. There's variability spatially too, in terms of whether the area is more open water or it's within a area that doesn't receive flow on a large scale basis, such as a finger with.
But once you take those sources of variability into account, then there's not a lot of variability outside of those predictable sources.
There's always going to be variability.
Well, yes.
And as a scientist, I would love to monitor everything.
Relative to.
The reality is we have to justify whatever monitoring we require of a discharger. And the discussion was pretty lively, actually. We felt like there was enough to characterize the system, is the idea. Not saying that there might not be some future changes and so on, which we may revisit this at some future point, but at the current time, we pretty much, the data painted a picture that we could pretty much rely on, this is how the system is, this is where it's at.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions for staff before I close this?
We have several procedural issues that we should probably cover also.
Now or during board discussion?
Well, we have to decide whether or not we're going to accept the two late comments that came in.
Okay.
Doug, did you want to talk about the two late comments?
Oh.
And the report also, we need to make a decision on the report.
There were two late comments submitted after the deadline, and one was from TRPA, and the other one was from an individual homeowner. And what staff did is that we looked at all those comments, and the one from the homeowner was just an information piece pointing out some possible shared stormwater facilities, which we've already talked to TKPOA, and the permit language already addresses all the shared stormwater facilities. And then as far as TRPA's laundry list of comments, what staff did is we went through all of those, and the vast majority of those were editorial and some clarifications. And what we did is we fixed up and addressed all of those in the proposed. So the proposed that is before you includes all of those comments being addressed.
Okay. Council, do you have a recommendation on that, given that they've been addressed?
So that we should accept them.
Okay. We will accept them.
And then in terms of the report, it looks like that we are comfortable making reference to the final report, but I would recommend that we don't include the report a part of this record at this time.
I agree with that recommendation. So you'll have some revised language when we move adoption of the Thank you. Okay, so board discussion?
It's gratifying to see so much work having been done with so much progress, but plainly the problem isn't resolved. But looks like we have good channels of communication established, and looks like we're going to be establishing a few more with Patty's help to do some even better coordination. So good job.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey.
Well, I would just echo Mr. Sandel's comments. It's gratifying to have people come and tell us how good it is to work with our staff, and it is. But it's a two-way street, and it's really exciting to see that all these people are here willing to work with us and willing to work, more importantly, with one another. This is a first step. It will be interesting to see what the results are and what we learn from this, and how we can take the successful pieces and do more of those. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays itself out.
Thank you. Mr. Jardine?
I have to agree with my two other board members. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dias?
I think we should approve the WDRs as we are.
Well, we need to make some revisions.
Okay. So we'll hold on to that thought.
What was your question?
Well, I was just saying that we need to make some revisions. My previous question? Oh, we have the revision that we identified on
12-16.
We're going to say final results were completed March 6, 2014.
Correct.
And then also I wanted to propose that in the late edition, in our response to the comments from the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association, R3, we had said text was changed to clarify that the limit is 5 acres total lifetime for the project. I propose that we change that to say, in order for TKPOA to do more than 5 acres of bottom barriers at a time, they are encouraged to do a CEQA document to analyze impacts of installing more than 5 acres of bottom barriers. I looked to see if the text was actually changed, and I did not see that the text was changed. Do you know if it was, Doug?
I added the word total in there, but not lifetime.
And
I don't know if you want to clarify the language further, and I appreciate your input on this. It wasn't clear reading through the small habitat restoration whether it was a lifetime or a single season or at any one time. So
I think that we can legitimately say it's at any one time. So if we want to change to say the project size shall not exceed 5 acres at one time covered by bottom barriers, we could.
That would make it the other end quite clear.
That's on 12-32. It's number 3. And I guess maybe we would change number 1 to where it says the project consists of not more than 5 acres at one time of non-chemical aquatic weed control. So there would be two modifications there.
So are you, do you feel comfortable with these changes?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. I mean, I'm just wondering if you feel like you've gone through enough of the document to know that there's not any other places where it needs to be changed to along those lines?
Yes.
Okay. So I would just like to say, I agree with Mr. Sandow's comments and Mr. Humphrey's comments that it's great the work that's been done together. I know you guys have been working together on this a long time, and this is a significantly improved permit over what we've had in the past. So that's very exciting. I am concerned, however, about that we get the costs of dealing with the issues in the Tahoe Keys aligned with the benefits. Who's paying the cost for this, and who benefits? I mean, clearly the people who live right on the Tahoe Keys benefit the most from. Oh, can we get slide number? Which one was it? The guy 11. Just to kind of. I mean, there is significant recreational beneficial uses we're supposed to be protecting in there, and that, and then there's the whole issue of the weed propagation outside of the Keys, and then the habitat that's created in the Keys that then allows non-native fish to move around in the lake, to develop populations that then move in the lake. So I'm concerned that we align who's paying the cost and who's benefiting from these measures aligned properly, and I don't feel comfortable that we've done that so far. And so I think that's part of a larger conversation. Clearly there are benefits that go to people. I mean, they're the people, the five entities that were named, but the benefits of managing these issues in the Tahoe Keys extend beyond those five groups. And somehow we need to get that in the mix somehow so that they are paying for the benefits of control as well, particularly if it's so incredibly expensive to control these things. I don't know how we get there, but I think we need to get there.
And I'd be happy to continue that dialogue. I think that's why you heard from Carol Haber at the Invasive Species Worker Group. That is why they also participate. And you heard from the largest places of bringing forward some ideas of how they, too, can bring both money and expertise and collaboration to moving this forward. So that is a good point, too, as going forward.
Yeah.
Maybe we could make it as a subset of this dialogue we're going to have in the summer with the other folks who are not in this room.
Right. And if doing the CEQA process becomes, you know, a useful thing to do, I agree with Ms. Dunbar's comments. Don't be afraid of it, because, particularly if we can find other sources of money for the bottom barriers. It's just been really frustrating, you know, the whole management process of the aquatic weeds so far. We're bailing with leaky buckets, and we need to find a more comprehensive solution here. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
I would move that we adopt the proposed WDRs with the changes in language on date stamp 1216 and 1232 as recited by council, and the late revision received this morning relative to the removal of the bottom barriers.
Any other late revisions?
Then on 12-128, the changed language on the response to comments.
Thank you. Yes.
So moved by Mr. Pumphrey and seconded by Mr. Sandell. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion is carried. Thanks again to everyone for all your hard work on this problem. Yes. The next item, who do I call up for that? Okay.